This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning.
Scott, good morning to you. You know, everywhere I travel, and you know I'm a traveler like you are, wherever I go.
You travel more than I do.
Yeah, I that's true. I've been trying to get all my traveling in, you know, post-COVID. But wherever I go, as soon as I say I'm from Montana, the first thing I hear these days is about Yellowstone, you know, the TV series and all the offshoots, 1923 and all the others.
Yeah.
And what I found fascinating has been, and we're going to talk about it today with our guest, but has been the economic impact of a TV series on a state like Montana. And the Bureau, you know, of Business and Economic Research at the University of Montana just completed a study from the year 2021 where they have all the data in to show the impact of just a Yellowstone show, which has about, I think, this season when it opened its first episode, had 12 million viewers. I mean, you can't get that kind of free publicity any other way, right? 12 million viewers. But in 2021, Yellowstone brought 2 million people to Montana just as a result
of
that show.
They were able to determine
that. By asking and doing the research, you know, that they do. And it had $730 million in spending from those 2 million people that came. And a lot of it was in our area. Even though the show is supposedly, you know, around Bozeman and, you know, Paradise.
And
yeah, well, you know, and it, even, you know, some of it's filmed in Butte. As we know, most of it is filmed here in Darby, Hamilton, Missoula, and the Bitterroot Valley. So a lot of that economic impact has really, you know, affected us. I've heard stories, and I think you know this as well, of them having a cast party and walking into a wine store in Missoula and buying every bottle of wine.
Right.
Or buying furniture for the Dutton Ranch, which, as we all know, is the Chief Joseph Ranch down, you know, close to Darby.
Right, in Darby.
Refurnishing the entire ranch for the show and letting them keep the furnishings. And, of course, hiring many, many people to work on the set and to be gophers and to do all kinds of work. It has really had a tremendous economic impact. And I think it's a good lead-in to our conversation today with Emily. And tell our listeners a little bit about Emily. You've worked with her a lot.
So Emily Ralston's with Destination Missoula and the tourism board here in town. And they are on the pulse of what's going on as it relates to tourists and out-of-staters, out-of-country people coming to Montana. Right. You know, you're right. That show really is just like a great, like, postcard to the world, like, hey, come visit us in Montana.
Well, it's not always a realistic postcard. Like, it never snowed. Right. It's never snowed on Yellowstone.
Right.
They don't have 20 degrees.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's like, it's crazy. But anyway, Emily has all the data, all the statistics right at her fingertips.
And we're going to talk to her about that and some other things about what's coming to Missoula, what's happening.
Right.
You know, has it become a more happening place in the last couple of years?
Back after this with Emily Ralston. Arnie Sherman, we are back with Emily Ralston.
From
Destination Missoula.
Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's fun to be here.
So right off the bat for our listeners, tell us what Destination Missoula is.
So Destination Missoula is a destination marketing and stewardship organization for our city. And that means that we promote this area for sustainable year-round tourism.
So is it equivalent in other towns to what we would call a convention and visitors bureau?
Yes. Yep. And that's a little bit more kind of antiquated language.
Right.
You know, as we grow and evolve, we like to, you know, change the lingo as well.
Yeah, because it's not just conventions. Conventions are a very limiting kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. But officially, we are recognized by the state of Montana as the CVB for Missoula. See,
and who makes up the membership? Who are the members of Destination Missoula?
Yeah, so we are a membership organization. We have about like 160 members, and it's really across the board. We have a bunch of hotels that are members, and then we have restaurants. We have attractions like the museums in town, and then we have, you know, services that kind of run the gamut.
But they're all really sort of focused on the tourism industry by and large, right?
Yeah, they do. I mean, it definitely touches that. I don't think they would necessarily be a member for us if they didn't have something to do with tourism.
Right, but we have plenty of those businesses, from fly shops to restaurants and hotels and, you know, all sorts of other entertainment and right. and activity organizations in this town. I mean, we have a plethora of them, and
absolutely,
you know, 160 is a good example for a town this size. Is a pretty sizable membership.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's your role?
So my role is one of our group sales managers. So I work pretty specifically with meetings and conventions, and I get to invite groups in to have their annual association meeting, convention, board retreat, anything like that.
And how large a group can we now handle? There's been over the years we've had people here talk about we need a new conference center, we need a convention center like Billings or whatever. How big a group can we handle? And in your opinion, do we need some venue that we don't have?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it kind of depends on each group. The University of Montana has a great convention center, and they can, you know, in that ballroom space in the UC,
right,
can hold about, you know, 600 people in that room. But a lot of these groups that I'm working with, right, they have that big general session where everyone's in there, and then they break out.
Right.
And that's where we kind of run into a little bit of limited space. I would say kind of our sweet spot is around like 200 to 350 maybe.
Right.
And, you know, I've gone back and forth on whether, you know, we want that big convention center here in Missoula. When COVID hit, I think we were pretty thankful that we didn't have that because
right.
we didn't have all this business that all of a sudden had to be canceled.
But you have like the Hilton Garden Inn, right?
Yes.
That has a nice sized ballroom that you can accommodate. And I think it's the new Homewood Suites. Aren't they going to have are they having a convention center attached to it?
They won't have a convention center. They might have some meeting space attached in there.
Here's the challenge for Destination Missoula and everybody else that's in this planning. The bigger events, you have to have breakout rooms.
Right.
And people are getting very fickled about how far they're willing to walk. I was just involved in a conversation where I was hearing feedback about a venue that a company was using that had about 2,000 people, and it was on four levels in a hotel in Chicago. And the reviews from the attendees, they're never going to use the facility again because people didn't like going up and down two or three or four levels. They want it all on one level, easy to get to. You know, at the University of Montana, at both continuing education and at the ballroom area, it's all on one level. There are breakout rooms. There just aren't enough.
Right.
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 You couldn't have 30 people in 20 rooms there. It just doesn't design. But the question obviously becomes, how many events do you have that you need 20 breakout rooms? I mean, your sweet spot is 200 to 300. Are there enough of those events around that want to come to Missoula?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've seen, kind of since last year, once COVID really started to wane a little bit more, we've seen the group business, that convention business really right. ramp up. Our convention hotels, the Hilton Garden Inn, Holiday Inn Downtown, and the Doubletree have been very busy with business. And we see a lot of that business kind of in the spring and the fall. Mm. Those are kind of our convention seasons. They're outside right. of kind of our peak summer
tour
season.
And you have to bid these a year or two ahead of time, right? A lot of these folks are booking these events way in advance.
They are, yeah. And that's kind of the typical, right? They have kind of their 2023-24 planned, and maybe we're looking at 2025. But again, kind of COVID threw a little bit of a wrench in the works, and some people were like, oh, let's get back to meeting, you know, in a couple months.
And what do you do? What do you and the group do to actually meet potential meeting planners / organizations that are looking to, you know, hey, I want to choose Missoula for my 2025 conference. How do you go and find those types of partners?
Yeah, so that's a very fun part of my job is I get to go to these meetings, trade shows, and I get to meet with event planners and meeting planners from all over the country, some international. So depending on, you know, the year, I'll go to Seattle or I was in Boise this past fall, and I just like speed dating with meeting planners. And so I get to tell them what Missoula has to offer. They get to tell me kind of about the group that they're working with or multiple groups, and we try to make a match.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this for about 4 years.
So in 4 years, you've got a pretty good handle on what they're looking for.
Yeah.
So I think we could all guess what we have that they're looking for. What don't we have that you wish we had?
That's a good question.
More swimming pools? I'm kidding.
Yeah. Everyone always wants that indoor swimming pool or outdoor.
Yeah, we have enough dispensaries, so that's not a problem. But what?
And bars.
And bars.
Yeah, we have so much to offer for people when they get here.
Right.
I think some things that we'd love to see some improvement in is our Lyft, our airlines, and the airport has done an amazing job with their opening of the new terminal. We were maxed out with space, so now we've got more space for more flights to come in, more carriers to come in. So I think that would be something we'd love to continue improving, just because then we can get more reach to more people. You know, again, like you were saying, people don't want to go up and down floors in the convention center. People don't want to have to make more than one layover.
Right, and if you can avoid Salt Lake City, my least favorite airport on the planet.
But if you had more direct flights to Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco.
Or more connections from Minneapolis.
That East Coast Lyft is, I think, where we could see a major improvement.
I would love direct.
Well, you know, Bozeman has it. The folks up in Big Sky subsidize it. So they get that direct Frontier flight, I think it is.
Yeah. And, you know, we have the ability to do that here in Missoula as well. We have what's called flight guarantees.
Right.
Right. And so we've done that in the past. We were a big piece of bringing in that Dallas flight on American Airlines, because we raised a bunch of money and in collaboration with some other organizations in the city, we're able to put money on the table and say, hey, come into Missoula, we'll guarantee these seats. And that flight has done amazingly well.
Well, that's good. So without divulging any confidentialities that you might have, who might be coming that our listeners might find interesting? What kind of groups would be coming to town in the next year or so?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so what I've learned and kind of the joke in the industry is that there is an association for literally everything.
Right. Yeah. Oh, totally.
Everything from like potatoes to potato seed association. Yep. And I think they've both actually met in Missoula in the past. So
the Unfunny Car Dealer Association.
A lot of them.
Yeah, we upcoming have a group that's very outdoor, like in the outdoor kind of media industry that's going to be upcoming. I'm trying to keep it a little bit vague. And then we have a couple of different like historical and museums associated meetings that are coming up. So I think the great thing about Missoula and again, back to, you know, do we want people, you know, that just press the button on the elevator, go from their room down to the convention floor and back up? We really attract a type of attendee and a type of group that wants to experience Missoula. Right. They might not mind going between a couple of different hotels or walking to the public library to have their meeting space because, you know, that's what Missoula is about, getting outdoors. You know, they want to be outside of that meeting room.
Especially in the spring and the fall.
That's a good thing to point out. There's great meeting space at the new public library.
Oh, there totally
beautiful.
Is.
Yes.
Who do we compete with? What other types of cities / markets are in our competitive set?
Yeah, I would say as far as kind of the town vibe, Boise, Bend,
Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, Bend,
Bozeman.
Oregon. Bozeman, a little bit. You know, I think that they do, because of the Big Sky connection, they hit a little bit more of that incentive focus, right? Where you get where you're bringing people up to Big Sky,
right? As a you know, a bonus or something for the year, right?
To take
the sales team to the Big Sky for the weekend.
How about Billings?
And we do compete with Billings, absolutely. They have a little bit more convention space than we do. We're similar with our flights. I have to say, I was there last spring for a conference, and Billings was pretty fun. I had a great meal.
Oh, I love Billings.
You know, it's
flat though. It's not like here.
Easier job.
How can you love Billings? You can like Billings. Arnie, I like Butte better than Billings. I like the vibe
good steak
in Butte
place
better.
In Billings.
We also compete with Coeur d'Alene, right? And Spokane a bit.
Yeah, probably Spokane maybe more than Coeur d'Alene, just because Coeur d'Alene has that the resort there, and so they'll be more akin to something like Whitefish as well, a little bit more of that incentive vibe.
Spokane has the Southwest direct nonstop flights out of there, so that makes them a little bit easier place to get to.
Yeah, they do have a convention center.
So have you noticed a difference in the work that you're doing and the interaction that you're having with potential clients and customers as a result of a show like Yellowstone? Have you felt –
I have. Yeah. I mean, when that started airing, I was a little bit of a latecomer in watching it. And I went to a couple shows and I had people asking me specifically about it. And I thought – I better watch this show. I better watch it for work. And, you know, it's been very enjoyable. I mean, you know, say what you will about the drama aspect of Yellowstone, but it really shows our area off well. It's beautiful. And we do, we get, my coworker, Kara, works in the group travel market, right. You know, the domestic right. tours where buses are coming through. And we have seen a huge spike in demand for anything Yellowstone related.
Sure.
And so
just remind everybody, they never show winter.
Right.
It's beautiful every day
right.
on Yellowstone.
Yep. Yep.
But I can tell you, I was traveling all over the world. I was in Germany. I was in Ireland. I was in Spain. I was in Portugal. And every place I went to, Yellowstone is on TV there and people are watching it.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. That's huge viewership. And I do. I think it's overall, I think it's a wonderful thing for our part of the country. And then you talk about the different spinoffs and just the economic impact that the filming has had in our communities.
Hey, when you have Kevin Costner amazing. As your governor.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. John, yes.
Well, what I find really interesting is in this season's storyline, tourism is a big character and part of it,
yes.
right? Where he basically said, they're basically saying, look, manufacturing's gone away. Cattle ranching has gone away. It's gone to South America. Tourism is our business. And I know when I sat on the board of Destination Missoula, Missoula has a complicated identity issue with tourism.
Yes.
Like we're in the tourism business, but they don't like to admit that we're in the tourism business, which I don't get.
But you admit it. I mean, you're in it.
We fully embrace it.
I do. And, you know, I grew up in this town. I've seen our town evolve. I know what good tourism brings in. And I think we're really at this point know that we have such an ability to communicate with those visitors and can help them visit our area and explore Missoula in such a responsible way.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for residents who, you know, love to go downtown, maybe in the middle of winter and they go to their favorite restaurant, that is being sustained by those tourism dollars right. that come throughout the year.
And, you know, totally. The conversation, you've been here your whole life. I've lived here for 26 years. First day I got here, I heard the conversation about we don't like these Californians coming in and ruining everything. You know, and it's 26 years later and you got a variation of that going on. But it's the change that you see everywhere.
Right.
Right.
Unless you're in the, you know, the Rust Belt of America. I hear it when I'm in Cincinnati. I was just in Tucson, and people are saying the same thing. All the California people are coming to Arizona.
Right.
You know, they're saying it in Nevada. All these Hawaiians are moving. You know, I mean, it's just everywhere. We have a mobile society, and we have the ability to go where, you know, where it appeals to us. And that may not last for your whole lifetime, but there's that mobility. And I think you're absolutely right. There's more good than bad that has happened.
Arnie, what are the tax implications with a show like a Yellowstone? Like, what does that generate?
1 year, $47 million in state sales tax.
From a show like Yellowstone?
Yeah. 10,000 people employed, $47 million in tax revenue, $741 million spent by the 2 million visitors.
2 million visitors.
That have indicated they came here primarily or partially as a result of watching Yellowstone.
Right. When those numbers came out, our office, I think, was pretty shocked. I mean that is a amazing. Massive amount of money.
Yeah. If somebody sat down with you and said, I could generate $2 billion in revenue for the state, you would think there was some kind of huckster, right? How can you do that? What are you going to do? Build Disney World in Montana? We already have Disney World in a different way.
Right.
And, you know, and...
Arnie, between that and cannabis... And recreational cannabis, Yellowstone Cannabis Factor has really thrown a lot more money into our sure. coffers.
You know, it's funny because there is another show, I don't know if it's even still on, that was called Big Country. That was another Montana.
Big Sky.
Big Sky.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
You know, and, you know, that also added to it. This is a much bigger impact than back, you know, 40 years ago when they had River Run through it. That was really kind of, it made everything look lush and beautiful. And I know there's an economic impact. But it really focused on a fly fishing and a family kind of story. You know, this has got so many spinoffs already. What, there are three shows? There's going to be four or five shows now? There's going to be
that
one
are all built off of the nucleus, off of the center point, which is Yellowstone.
Right. I mean, there's going to be one with Morgan Freeman. I mean, I don't even know how he fits into all this, but he's just signed on to star.
1923, 1883.
It's called The Duchess with Morgan Freeman. It's about a woman, you know, pioneer.
But I have a question. So, and related kind of to what you're here to talk about. So how many organizations you know, are there in our market area that really benefit and take advantage of tourism? And how do you help them put themselves front and center to actually, if they're doing an event or they're doing an initiative, how can Destination Missoula help these local organizations, whether it's a race or a tournament or a, you know, you tell me, what makes tourism fly here in Missoula, and how do you help them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we have and we will continue to touch a lot of those different organizations, you know, whether that's, you know, we have a free events listing on our website and you can put your event information on there. We get, right. It's something like, you know, 10,000 hits a month of visitors looking at that page, you know, so really
they want to know
helping
what's going
promote,
on.
Yeah, when and where these things are taking place. We also, so Destination Missoula and the Tourism Business Improvement Districts are, you know, two organizations kind of under one house, under Destination Missoula.
Right.
And the TBID is funded through guest dollars that are staying at hotels in town. And so the TBID hotels, we have 36 in Missoula right now. And every time a guest stays in a room, they pay $2 on top of their room rate, and that goes to the TBID for our research, for marketing, for promotion. And then we also have money that we grant out to different organizations that are having events in Missoula.
What does that look like?
So that number has changed a little bit over the years. COVID, we definitely took a hit because no right. events were happening. But we have an application process. We do two cycles a year, so folks can apply. And really, we're looking at new events that are coming into Missoula or ones that are growing and need a little bit of help really getting it out there, marketing to, you know, a greater area, to multiple states. And it can, you know, kind of run the gamut of what that looks like. A meeting planner who's having their, you know, meeting at the university or at one of the hotels could apply, or a race could apply.
Music, arts,
absolutely.
Crafts, whatever.
Yep. We've had, you know, a bunch of different grantees over the year. Let's see, where are my numbers? We've had 72 events that we've granted money to over the years since 2011.
Wow.
$2 isn't enough. I know when I travel around, I'm paying a lot more than that in almost every other place that I go to support that local. I mean, New York City, it's like $40 a night.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we're getting $2.
Yep. What should we get? Yeah, I always say the cost of living is the same as New York.
I don't think anybody's not going to come here if it's $4 a night or $5 a night, right? I mean, it's just the ads on. It's like, you know, it's a tip or it's
that number, though, is not determined by Destination Missoula. It's determined by the state, right?
So it's actually determined by the city of Missoula. If we wanted to change that, it would have to go through the city of Missoula and city council. But the TBIDs in general across the state is part of the Montana state legislature.
Do you know what Bozeman gets per head or what Billings
does?
Yeah,
$2 right now is pretty much the going rate. I know that there's some communities that it's $1 or $1.50, but $2 is the highest.
That's amazing.
For the state of Montana.
It seems so low.
It does seem pretty low. It's interesting. In Montana, we have the state accommodations tax or the bed tax.
Right.
So, you know, if you stay in a hotel or at a campground, it applies to more than just hotel motels. You'll get a 8% tax added to your room charge.
But that's
right?
The state's collecting that.
That's the state, and we get a small piece of that comes back to Missoula. Right. But the TBID $2 fee just is in Missoula.
Right.
That stays in Missoula. Of course, other communities have a TBID as well.
But. So the grant process, since we're coming up on another cycle, right?
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that and how do people take advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. So our applications are due March 1st. We have a, in my opinion, very kind of streamlined, easy grant application. You can apply right on our website. And you basically just have to tell us some information about your event, you know, when it's taking place, how many people. We have a couple, you know, eligibility
time
requirements.
Of year.
Yep,
right.
Time of year is a big one. We really try to push these into the shoulder and off seasons. So you get kind of extra points on your application if your event is happening between October and April. We know it's really busy here in June, July, August, September. So we're trying to, you know, push those newer events or bigger events to happen outside of those times.
Have you noticed the impact of rising hotel nightly rates and restaurant prices on decisions that groups are making to come here, or tourists in general?
Yeah, that's definitely, and I would say probably more the hotel rate than, you know, restaurant rates. The great thing we get to tout in Montana, too, is that we do not have a sales tax. Right. That makes a big difference for groups when you're looking at a big food and beverage charge at a hotel.
Yes.
Or when your attendees go out for shopping, eating with them. But, over the past couple of years, and I think COVID has been a player in this, is we have seen that average daily room rate, or ADR, go up quite a bit. It's something that our boards are talking about. It's something that, you know, hotels across Montana are really talking about. And if there's kind of, if we're going to reach that tipping point where it's no longer possible to be charging those rates.
And it's all relative. I mean, if you want to stay at the Montage in Big Sky in February, you're going to pay $2,200 a night.
Wow.
That's what it is. And if you want to stay at Paws Up, or if you want to stay at, you know, Triple Creek, I mean, those set a much higher standard. But if a typical hotel room is $300-$400 a night during that same kind of time period, it does drive people to, you know, to pause a little bit. If you can come stay four nights and you got children coming, you have to rent two rooms. You're talking about, you know, $3,000 plus just for your hotel, just for a place to stay.
Absolutely. And what we've been watching too is, you know, Montanans travel within the state a lot, right?
Yeah.
And kids have tournaments. And we really want to keep those local tournaments and keep those local travelers coming back, right? So that's definitely something that we're thoughtful about.
I was going to say, do you find the rates that they're charging in the summer, they start to bleed into the shoulder season a little bit? Like, they're able to get higher rates, you know, in the fall.
Yeah, and we have kind of seen that our busy season extend more into September, more into October than we have in the past. And sometimes that's the best, you know, best time to come visit.
The secret that's out about Montana is September and October are probably the two best months, particularly Missoula.
Right.
I mean, I can't remember how many Grizz football games I've gone to in October in a T-shirt.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's...
Or a parka in June.
Parka in June.
Emily Ralston's our guest on today's show, talking and from Destination Missoula. Now, what's your title? It's the head of group sales?
Group sales manager.
Group sales manager.
You
can put me at the head of it.
Well, you kind of are, though, because...
The omnipotent head of...
You're the group sales manager, but the point is that it's you.
It's me, and it's my wonderful colleague, Kara, who do all the group business.
Right. Well, one of the things, one of the impacts of this upward trend in hotel and restaurant prices is that you may still be full, but there'll be a different kind of person coming here than came before. You know, they're more affluent. I mean, the Wilson Hotel in Big Sky, which is a residence inn, but they can't call it this is my take on it. Apologize to whoever the owner is. They have a little sign about 4 inches wide and 8 inches long, it says residence. And they got this huge sign, the Wilson, over the top of it.
Right.
And in a week from now, if you want to stay there, it's $600 a night to stay at a residence inn.
Well, it's also in Big Sky Village, which prime season for
that
skiing.
Doesn't include lift tickets. It doesn't. It's just, that's just your, that, and that's a residence inn. That's not the Big Sky Resort. That's not Yellowstone Club. That's not the Montage. That's a residence inn.
At the Summit. Right.
Yeah.
No. They're taking advantage of it. Do you think that COVID and the 2.5 years we spent under COVID watch was, while you weren't able to take advantage necessarily and travel as much, kind of like pulling back a bow and releasing it, and now everybody wants to travel and get everywhere and be there, and we're taking advantage of the rates. Like, where rates are going up, right? Like, to come here, you have to have more money. You have to be able to travel here. You have to get on a plane. You have to have more money. Everything's gone up. And so we're taking advantage of it just like everybody else.
Right, yeah. We're definitely not in a bubble here. We've seen kind of this same trend in the Mountain West. And again, right. I think people couldn't go to those big cities during COVID. People couldn't travel internationally. So they, you know, looked at a map, saw that COVID wasn't.
Well, airfares have gone up also, for sure. I mean, you don't get many discount airfares. Lights. You see every once in a while there's a flash sale, but it's not that great.
No.
You know, other people that are in the industry are trying to maximize their profits because of potential recession or whatever. And so prices are going up more end up of those price increases in the owner's pockets than it does in the employee's pockets.
And that's for sure.
Proven over and over again. And, you know, the argument is, well, we can't find qualified people, so we have to pay a lot more. Therefore, we have to raise all of our prices. They don't have to raise their prices. They're raising their prices because they want to take advantage of the economic weakness, just like the oil companies. They have record profits. So there's no problem. I mean, they could have charged less for oil and gas and still made almost record profits, but they charged as much as the market would allow them to.
Right.
Right.
And that's one of the unintended consequences. And while we're not here to argue politics or economic policy, it does have an effect on your job when you're trying to attract a group here and they got 200 people coming. Say, okay, what's it going to cost us for meals? What's it going to cost us for rooms? What's it going to cost us for Ubers? What's it going to cost us for flights? And how does that compare to, you know, my other options that are out there?
Right, exactly. And, you know, something we talk about in the office too is a family might choose to come out to Montana for that destination trip, right? But we want them to come back again.
Right.
And if they feel that they come out here and they're not finding that value, right? It's not making sense if they're paying too much. They might not come out again and they might not tell their family and friends to travel to Montana.
Right.
And that's been such a big piece of Montana's tourism is people coming back, and especially for Missoula, as people come back again and again.
And we want a cross-section. We don't just want the most affluent.
Absolutely.
As Governor Dutton said, you know, we just don't want all those, you know, high, those expensive Californians. I do have to tell you one of my tourism stories. I won't name the resort, but there's a private resort in Montana that has golf, and I happened to be invited by one of the members, and I got to play there, and it was very nice. And I was sitting on the veranda of the clubhouse, and there was a group of people that were clearly visiting. You know, they had jeans that were, you know, ironed and, you know, right out of the box. Everything was brand new. And two couples were sitting there, and they just assumed we were like them. And they said, and I quote, "You know, I love coming to Montana. The villagers are so friendly, and everything's so cheap here." Yeah, it's called village. You know, my point to you is this: we don't want to become serfs to America's tourism aristocracy, right?
Right.
You know, we're gonna. Everything's cheap here, and you know, and it's not cheap. But to them, relatively speaking, we're flying here in private aircraft, and you know, and are staying at a place where it's $2,000 a night, and you know, the drinks are $12 instead of $20 like they are in New York City, so they think it's cheap here.
Yeah,
that creates a different clientele for the state's tourism industry, and it changes a bit of, you know, what we're all about.
Yeah, absolutely, and we want there to be a diverse set of people that are coming to visit us, right?
Yeah.
I think the main thing that we want in our visitors, right, is people who will really value this place, who will understand Missoula values, Montana values, and treat this place like we do, like, and so that they can come back again and again, and it, you know.
Well, the nice thing about when a group comes to visit is that if they come during the shoulder season, the one thing they are going to go home and tell their significant other is, we got to take the kids to Western Montana. We got to go to Missoula and Glacier and Whitefish and Yellowstone. Let's do a, you know, a 10-day road trip. And so that's what's so great about what you're working on is that you are sometimes a group/individual's first interaction with Montana.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So how do you do that in a way where they're getting a real authentic but also reasonable experience from a cost standpoint? Because those groups, I mean, that's a big expense, right? That's one of the things we saw during COVID is group trips and group meetings like that. It's been replaced with Zoom.
Right, yep.
So how do you un-Zoom them?
Right, yeah. Well, and I think there is, you know, still this kind of itch to get back in person, right, and to have that interaction.
Well, there's Zoom fatigue, too. There's just so many of those kind of meetings where you never meet the person in real life.
Well, we were going to do this via Zoom, and I'm glad we didn't.
I know. I'm glad that I'm right in here in the studio.
That's right.
But there's a different kind of chemistry. So, you know, when when I go out and I talk with different meeting planners, I try to find those groups that do want to have experiences outside of the meeting room, right? And we can talk about the breweries in Missoula. We can talk about all the arts and entertainment and, of course, all of our outdoor recreation. And that's just it. You know, sometimes if a group books in here, then we know that they're going to bring a spouse, they're going to bring their family to come before or after that meeting they want to experience the area. Or they go home and then bring their family back another time of year. And I think being able to show them kind of the cross section of Missoula and all the different things that you can do, you know, if someone's not a big outdoor rec person, that's okay. We have a bunch of other things that
they
can do.
They might like all the music scene, absolutely, right? They go to Kettle House and, you know, see a great concert here for 1/10 the price of what it is anywhere else.
Yeah, and arguably the most beautiful venue in the world.
I mean, it is. We have a lot to attract.
Emily, tell us a little bit about your background, because you didn't just land here. I know you were born in Missoula, right? But you left for a little while and then came back. What's your story?
Where did you work
before you came to Destination Missoula?
Sure. Yeah. I grew up here, went to Hellgate, Go Knights. and then I chose to leave and go out of state for college. Went over to a small college in Walla Walla, Washington, and then lived in Seattle for a year after that, had a little dose of the big city, and then wanted to come back. I really missed that access to the outdoor recreation
What were you doing in Seattle?
In Seattle, I worked for a kind of a startup tech company that they were a data center brokerage firm, and which is absolutely not my background. I was an anthropology major in college. And it was fun. I got to do kind of different special projects and stuff for the CEO, and they've done amazingly. But I wanted to come back. And then when I moved back to Missoula, I got a job with Adventure Life, and they're an adventure travel and touring company.
With Brian.
Yeah, with Brian. And did that for about 15 months and just felt that it wasn't the best fit, and then moved on to Destination Missoula where I could focus more on that inbound tourism instead of outbound.
Sure. So you were in a very interesting town to go to college in, Walla Walla.
Yeah.
Which most people never heard of, and all of a sudden they really promoted the heck out of their wine industry.
Right.
And now it's become a destination venue.
Absolutely.
And actually a pretty cool one.
I love going back to that town, and I think they're probably seeing some similar things that we are here too, right?
They're smaller, right? It's about 25 or 30,000?
I think they're about 30,000 people. Yeah,
so it's
a smaller community, but they've got
a lot of stuff, that whole downtown, a lot of restaurants, a lot of night spots, a lot of interesting wineries.
Have you been recently? I want to go.
Yeah, it's great. I really like it there. They have a cool hotel.
Yes.
You know, they got a nice hotel downtown. They got a bunch of great, hip, vineyards and wineries.
Right. I was going to say, you are Walla Walla, and then how about Spokane, Tri-Cities? Like, you could do the tour.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All really close in there. And I think they probably have a lot of drive market from, you know, Seattle, Portland. It's like 4 hours to get to those cities. So they have a little tiny airport. So I feel very lucky with our flights in comparison to Walla Walla. But great community, and the folks in the tourism office over there are really fun too. I've had the chance to meet them. So,
yeah, that's good.
Well, our airport, as you know, is going to double in size.
It is, yes.
And I mean, it's great now compared to where it was. It's going to be even greater, and that's going to afford better, you know, service and more that you can, you know, tout when you're trying to attract businesses here.
Right. And Arnie, you were just traveling.
Yes.
And you were just going through Salt Lake City.
Yeah, which I hate. I'll tell you what they did
there. Why do you hate it?
I'll tell you why I hate it. Because they made the wrong decision. They decided to close up the old terminal and open the new one before it was 2 years before it was ready. So you have to. So last night, 10 degrees out, you land in the A terminal. Then you have to. And all of the flights in Missoula leave from the end of the B terminal. They're two very long terminals.
So far away.
Half a mile long almost.
Right.
You have to walk down, go through three, you know, movable sidewalks if they're working. If you're handicapped, you have to wait for somebody, and there's hardly anybody ever there because it's hard to staff that. Then you come up on the other side, you walk all the way to the end. Then when they call the Missoula flight, you have to walk down a ramp that goes back and forth and back, you know, sort of a switchback. You walk almost a third of a mile to get to a bus That's a 5-minute bus ride to your plane. Ugh. This is third world. I did that in Africa. You're not supposed to be doing that. And they say this is going to go on for another 2 years.
Yeah, it's a major project. That.
So I really don't understand, and I probably could get an explanation for it, but why? We did the right thing here, right? We kept our airport running like to the day the new one was going to open up. And it just flipped.
Yep. I mean, it was amazing the transition that they made. That team was literally fantastic. You know, carrying over computers, desks, all that stuff to make it happen in one night.
And you're right.
The old airport there wasn't that bad. I mean, the old Salt Lake City airport wasn't really that bad.
No, it was fine.
It was fine. They could have kept it open for 2 more years, built this thing out, and then moved everybody over. But they didn't. And so you have all of this, you know, commotion. If you fly, you cannot, if you fly in an international flight, because lots of there are some directs to London and Paris, and I've taken them, you have to plan to have at least 2 hours to clear customs. They also do something in customs there that I've never seen anywhere else, which is you wait for your bags first before you go through customs. So you can pay to be a first class passenger, but if your, which allows you to get to the head of the line, so to speak, but if your luggage doesn't come off first, you're waiting till every, and you know, you could be, those are usually large flights. You could have 200-300 people ahead of you because they make you get your luggage before you go through. And I've never seen that anywhere else.
That's terrible.
So I just don't like the way they've imagined this transition period, and it's very user unfriendly.
Right.
It's a long answer to your question.
I think, you know, Brian Elstad at the airport,
right.
They went and toured other airports and noted what was working, what was not working, you know, to really make the user experience heightened in Missoula. And I think they've done a fantastic job.
It was seamless. You know, everything works well. Luggage comes off quickly. You're not waiting around 45 minutes, an hour for luggage, even if you come in at 1 o'clock the morning flight like I did.
And one, my wife waits for the bags to come, and I go get
the car. The car's right
there.
It's a
great partnership.
Have to take a bus.
It's a true partnership.
You don't have to take a bus to your car here, like you do in a lot of other airports.
Right, yeah.
So, Emily, you've been at Destination Missoula for 4 years. You're running group sales.
You're working for Barb.
Barb Nealon.
Great.
Yes.
Who's been there, however.
Our director.
400 years.
Our executive director.
Since before Missoula was a...
She's been there now. How many years?
She has been there almost 20 years.
She knows this place better than anybody.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And knows how to get things done. I mean, that's the one thing that I learned when I sat on the board of Destination Missoula. When you're in a board situation and you're working in a government, you know, you're kind of like to the side of the government, right, but you were relying on them. Things take a long time to get done. So it's a long game. It's not like boom, boom.
Plus, the other thing we haven't talked about is that the workforce in Missoula and the infrastructure of the business activity here has transformed since you were at Hellgate.
Absolutely.
You know, and now it's very tech focused. You know, if you walk into a restaurant downtown, you go to the pricier restaurants in downtown. They're all people in their 30s mostly that are in there. And they're working at Cognizant. They're working at a number of the other, you know, tech companies that are here in town, making competitive salaries, you know, which are, you know, which allow them to.
For larger markets, right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And that hasn't had an effect because that will attract more conferences and more events.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's all really tied together, right? The economic development piece is very tied to tourism. You know, so we're working with MEP a lot, the Missoula Economic Partnership. We know that, you know, tourists coming in, they might look at Missoula and say, hey, I might want to relocate here, right? That's not our focus at Destination Missoula, but we know that that does happen. And so we know we're part of the conversation when we talk about quality of life, when we talk about things like housing, we talk about what kind of industries, you know, where we are looking at to come into our community.
Totally. We had Grant here back in December, actually, talking about a lot of these.
The biggest challenge in all of this is that, you know, that's the exciting side. And the tough side is the folks that are here working regular jobs that don't get the advantage of some of, you know, this economic lift.
Right.
And then they see everything around them getting much more expensive than it's been.
Totally.
I mean, you were in Seattle. You know what the costs are there. I was sitting in a waiting for a meeting, and there was a woman and her mother looking at it. She had gotten a job here. The daughter had gotten a job here, and they were looking at apartments. and they were looking at an apartment, and the mom said, "How much is that?" And the daughter said, "Well, it's only $2,000 a month." And she said, "Well, that's cheap." And so I asked them, "Where are you coming from?" Right. And I said, "Oh, we're moving. My daughter's job was in New York City, and now she's moving here to take a job here. And $2,000 is cheap."
Right.
Yeah, but for somebody who's lived here their whole life and are trying to find a $1,000 a month apartment or a $900,
very difficult.
It's hard to do.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt that there's so many people can't afford to live here anymore.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Emily Ralston, the head of group sales for Destination Mozilla, group sales manager, and we'll be back right after these words. Arnie, we are back with Emily Ralston.
So, Emily, we're heading into our 20th anniversary of Destination Missoula, and you're launching a new stewardship program, right? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we are. So we are very excited to be celebrating 20 years, and we have been wanting to do kind of this 10-year tourism plan for a while now, and COVID kind of hit the brakes on that project, and we're actually glad it did, because COVID kind of brought around some different focus for us with this. And so now we're headed into a destination stewardship planning process. And it's really, you know, to try to get the thoughts, the sentiments from our residents, from our local businesses, from different organizations, really to shape what Missoula tourism looks like for the next 10 years. You know, how can we make this sustainable? What can we do better? What do we need to, you know, what are things that we don't know that residents are feeling about tourism? We really want to reach out to the community and have it be a big conversation.
And that's an important thing for an organization to tackle.
Yeah. Sure.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Early we were talking about grants. Money always attracts me, interests me. So how does that grant process work to get some of this money that you guys have?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the grant process, you can go on and apply online at tbid.destinationmissoula.org.
Do that one more time, slower.
tbid.destinationmissoula.org.
Okay.
And you can click grant opportunities. You'll go to our application page. You kind of can check and see if you're eligible for the grant. There are a couple that we want you to have at least 100 room nights that you're bringing into our community. Want to make sure that you have enough planning time before your event. So we require 7 months in advance. So for this cycle, any event that's happening October 2023 or later is eligible to apply. We have a great grant video that one of our board members, our previous board members, Christine Johnson, did for us, where she walks you through the process. It's very easy. And you get an additional 5 points on your application if you watch that video.
Smart.
So I always tell people to watch that.
What's the monetary range, or is there one for these?
There isn't one. You know, we have granted anywhere from like $1,000 up to $15,000, depending on kind of the size, the breadth of the event. So we encourage everyone to apply, you know, and then we have a lovely grant selection committee. So I'm the staff liaison for that. I'm not actually on the committee, but they look over all the different applications, they score them, they do interviews, and they decide kind of what that money allocation looks like.
Give us the email address or the website address again.
Yeah, it is tbid.destinationmissoula.org.
Beautiful. And destinationmissoula.org is the general website
right.
For people who want to find out about all these great things that are going on and who's coming to town and all of your events and activities.
Yep, exactly. All of our, you know, our blog lives on our website. We have our events page. We have everything you want to know about Missoula.
Pretty pictures.
Lots of pretty pictures.
Yeah, their Instagram is great, too.
Yeah, great.
Anyway, this hour flew by.
Flew by.
Flew by. Jeez, thank you guys good. So much.
Thank Emily, you for coming.
Great to have you here, and we look forward to great things in the coming year.
Yes, stay tuned.
All right, I'll see you next week, Arnie.
Take care, Scott. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO,